The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob Frantz on AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, welcome indeed. Good morning to you. It is 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock, and we're underway on a Tuesday, the 23rd morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024. The Attorney General, the top cop, if you will, of the state of Ohio will join me in about a half an hour, at about 9:35. We will talk to Dave Yost about a host of issues, including his call for a narrowed down version of the ban on the SAFE Act that has been put in place by Franklin County Judge Michael Holbrook. We're going to be talking to the Attorney General about that. He said it's far too broad of a ban statewide for one case that was brought up in Franklin County. We're going to talk to him about that. We're also going to talk to him about where things stand with the abortion amendment that passed on November 7th and what efforts are being made in the General Assembly to limit some of the far-reaching impact of that horrific, anytime, on-demand, through-the-moment-of-birth abortion policy that has now been adopted into state law. So Dave Yost will join us. And then at 10:10, of course, what a great day. It's a Kersenow day. Peter Kersenow will be with us to discuss all of the news of the day. His commentary segments are phenomenal and legendary, and we are looking forward to those this morning. Of course, in addition to Dave Yost and Peter Kersenow, the most important guest that we have on the program is you. When you are ready to call, 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. By the way, please do not be frightened. I don't bite. Even the leftists who call from Flakewood sometimes, they manage to survive their day. What I mean by that is, if you are a regular listener, God bless you and thank you for listening. But be active. Be a caller. I would love to hear from you. 216-901-0945. We have a wonderful, wonderful core of regulars who call us every day. And then we need new voices as well. The more we talk, the more we discuss, the more people and ideas that we hear, the more we learn, and the better we are. So let's make that happen. 216-901-0945. So Dave Yost and Peter Kersenow are coming up. And also coming up is our top nine at nine, which will immediately follow our Pledge of Allegiance. Patriots, stand up and face your flag if you have one nearby. Again, keep sending those to me on social media. I love that. I'm posting the new ones all the time, or at least adding them to my gallery that I do have posted. So you'll find me on Always Right Radio on Facebook and on France Rants on Twitter if you want to participate in that. And we do want you to participate in the pledge if you are a patriot. Stand tall and face that flag. If you are a believer in surrendering American sovereignty and sending American blood and treasure overseas for things that do not involve us, well, maybe, just maybe, maybe you don't believe in the glory of this great republic. Maybe, just maybe, you don't believe in American liberty and America first. And if you don't believe in America first, then you believe in America last. And you are thus excused from pledging allegiance to our flag and to our country. You may instead take a knee like the Marxist dogs over there. For the rest of us,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are you ready for it? What is going on in the world today? Let's find out.
It's 9 o'clock. Do you know where your headlines are? We do. It's time for the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio.
At least this is how I see what's going on in the world today.
Number 1.
Republican Missouri Senator Josh Hawley sent a letter yesterday to Joe Biden calling on him to deploy the Guard. Send the National Guard to protect Jewish American students at Columbia University's campus as the protests continue there and are spiraling out of control. Hawley said that Jewish Americans are currently at risk on college campuses. He mentions how in-person classes were canceled at Columbia on Passover yesterday due to ongoing protests that he described as an illegal pro-Hamas demonstration. That is a fair description. He said Biden must immediately mobilize the National Guard and any other necessary authorities to ensure the safety of Jewish American students and citizens. The call for the National Guard comes as the New York City Police Department is apparently forbidden from entering Columbia's campus without a call for assistance from the university. That has very, very few exceptions. New York City Mayor Eric Adams said one of them is an imminent threat.
What we are seeing playing out on many of our college campuses, and particularly in Columbia University, is hate. We're seeing vile language being used, and at no time should we call for the destruction of anyone? Should we call for violence towards anyone? That is not what protesting is about. Now we have to go within the law. In this country and in this city, comments like that on the surface are not illegal. But if you use it to harass someone or menace someone, we're going to take appropriate action to stop that from taking place. And we will go on private property for imminent threat. Even though it's a private property, if there's imminent threat or danger to someone, the NYPD will go on that private property.
So they're being very, very cautious, however, because they don't want to be seen as interrupting the protest of the radical leftist pro-Palestinians. So Eric Adams said, only if there's an imminent threat. What does that mean? Somebody has to call in a bomb threat before you guys will do anything to protect the Jewish students who are being harassed there? The reality is, Adams and the police can only do so much without the effort of the university president. The university president, who once declared that 9/11, the 9/11 terror attacks, shortly after that, that terrorism is simply a form of protest. That's who's leading the university that has become kind of the flashpoint for this pro-Palestinian, anti-Jewish, anti-Israel protesting. That's who we're talking about here. It's spreading, by the way, to the West Coast, too. This is happening on MIT, and it's happening at Columbia, and it's happening at, Yale. But it is now spreading to the West Coast as well, as Berkeley has set up Tent City and pro-Palestine and anti-Israel and anti-genocide and so on and so forth. So it is spreading around the country as more and more of these brainwashed, indoctrinated lunatics continue their hate campaign against Jews.
Number 2.
President Trump arrived at the courthouse yesterday to hear opening statements from the prosecution and defense teams over the 34-count indictment that accuses him of falsifying business records to cover up an alleged hush money payment to former porn actress Stormy Daniels. It is alleged that Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, who is as slimy and disgusting and much of a liar as anything you've ever seen in a courtroom, paid $130,000 to Daniel to keep an alleged extramarital affair between her and Trump undisclosed ahead of the 2016 presidential election. George Washington law professor Jonathan Turley is watching the events closely. Excuse me. He compared the allegations against Trump to former... Again, excuse me. He compared the allegations against Trump to a former Democratic candidate, Hillary Clinton, whose campaign funded the Steele dossier to investigate the now discredited claims that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia to win the 2016 election. But she's not being prosecuted. Turley calls this entire thing a joke.
What is clear is in this case, Trump is right. I mean, this is an embarrassment. I mean, the fact that we are actually talking about this case being presented in a New York courtroom leaves me in utter disbelief. I mean, the arguments today did, in fact, capture all the problems here. You know, you had this misdemeanor under state law where that had run out. This is going back to related to the 2016 election. And they zapped it back into life by alleging that there was a campaign finance violation under the federal laws that doesn't exist. The Department of Justice doesn't view it this way. But on top of that, you've got these tough factual issues that were laid out well by the Trump team, saying someone else designated this as a legal expense. And he was actually paid far in excess of this because of this was a legal account. But also keep in mind, this is what Hillary Clinton's people did. You know, remember when they funded the Steele dossier, which they denied to reporters, they put it as a legal expense. And then they fought the eventual fine that they received from the federal government, saying, but it was a legal expense. But now you've got some of the same Democrats supporting this bizarre theory.
How about that? Then again, they wouldn't be Democrats if they weren't hypocrites and, indeed, rats.
Number three.
According to the Times of Israel, Israel's top military intelligence official announced his resignation yesterday because of what happened on October 7th. Apparently, failures in the IDF defenses of the Israeli land, well, that's what they're paying the price for now. Major General Aaron Haliv, chief of the IDF's military intelligence directorate, stepping down. Once a replacement can be appointed, the move was coordinated with IDF Chief of Staff Herzi Halevi being approved by Defense Minister Yoav Gallant. The names don't mean anything to you, but the bottom line here is the attack on October 7th claimed the lives of 1,200-plus people in Israel, another 253 kidnapped and still being held hostage, those who are still alive, and much of the area devastated. The victims were almost all civilians. Military leaders in March launched a preliminary review of the Army's performance on October 7th, which left some of the towns fighting on their own for hours. And experts say they expect there to eventually be a formal independent investigation of all aspects of the October 7th crisis along the lines of the 9/11 Commission here in the United States.
Number four.
President Joe Biden is suffering erosion, as they're calling it, on a number of critical fronts in polling that pits him against President Trump. NBC survey in April showed Trump performing better than Biden across several categories, with little more than a half year remaining until the November presidential election. These findings are troubling for the Biden campaign, showing the erosion of public confidence on a number of critical fronts. Which kind? Well, handling a crisis, Trump plus four. Strong record as president, Trump plus seven. Competent and effective, Trump plus nine. Necessary mental and physical health, Trump plus 19. And dealing with inflation and the cost of living, Trump plus 22. That's an NBC poll. Not a Rasmussen, not an RNC, not a Fox News, not a Republican push poll. That's an NBC poll that says Biden is in serious trouble. And now you know why President Trump is being forced to sit in a courtroom instead of being out on the campaign trail.
Number five.
According to the LA Times, supporters of a proposed November ballot initiative wanted the all-important title of their measure to reflect their beliefs. A name like Protect Kids of California Act. But Attorney General in California Rob Bonta saw things differently when his office chose the name that the signature gatherers must use, which is Restrict Rights of Transgender Youth. With a May 28th deadline to submit signatures and 25% of their way to the goal, the initiative backers must use the state's description, which they say is hindering their effort. They have sued the state. This is unbelievable. Claiming the initiative was branded with a misleading, false, and prejudicial title, a hearing is set for April 19th. What's going on here? Albert Mohler explains it. This is a proposed citizen initiative in California that isn't radical at all. It simply says if you have a child in public schools who identifies as transgender or non-binary or one of the other loopy, ridiculous things that they're putting in these kids' minds, if that child presents a different identity at school than at home, then parents must be informed. You'll notice that the California state authorities, the California education authorities in terms of the public schools, don't want that to happen because they do not want kids to actually be influenced by their parents. But neither one of those names, as far as I'm concerned, are appropriate enough. Protect kids of California. Restrict rights of transgender youth. How about let parents be in charge of their kids' act? How about that?
Number six.
Biden marked Earth Day yesterday, announcing a $7 billion in federal grants for residential solar projects. Anybody remember Solyndra? Serving 900,000 plus households in low and middle income communities. He also is expanding his New Deal style America Climate Corps Green Jobs program. The grants being awarded by the EPA unveiled 60 recipients on Monday. I guarantee you know what kinds of recipients these are as they continue to funnel money to their allies. These projects are expected to eventually reduce emissions by the equivalent of 30 million metric tons of carbon dioxide and save households $350 million annually, according to senior administration idiots in the Biden administration. The latest environmental announcement comes as Biden is working to energize young voters, which is what this is all really about, for his reelection campaign. He used his executive action powers last year to create the American Climate Corps, modeled after Roosevelt's New Deal. He announced that 2,000 core positions are being offered across 36 states, including jobs offered in partnership with the North American Building Trades Union. The Earth Day backdrop to further his climate, his administration's climate initiatives, and to add to his core, his climate core, young people that he needs to vote for him.
Number seven.
Have you heard that the Democratic National Convention is coming to Chicago? That question asked by Joe Eisbacher, I'm running with. He asked a crowd, have you heard that the DNC is coming to Chicago? Are we going to let them come here without a protest? This is Chicago. We've got to give them a 1968 kind of welcome, end quote. If you don't know, in 1968, the Democratic Convention in Chicago was a bloodbath. 600 arrests in one street battle that was broadcast all over the world. And the group that met here on Saturday in Chicago, in the local headquarters of the Teamsters Union, wants to repeat that history when Joe Biden is named the presidential nominee of the DNC in August. They opposed the president that they called Genocide Joe for backing Israel in its war against Hamas. And Biden, of course, is very, very, very lightly and thinly backing Israel as he continues to sell them out, quite frankly. But not enough for them. Over a single day, the March on DNC 2024 conference gathered 75 organizations to discuss how they plan to disrupt the DNC. Speakers told the crowd how to flood the streets without getting arrested, how to spot members of Secret Service, and how to say death to America in Farsi. Yes, the Democrats are gathering in Chicago for a bloodbath. And who can expect anything more or less?
Number eight.
Turns out that every single one of the Fortune 100 companies, 100% of them, have made a public commitment to DEI on their website. Not a single outlier in the top 100 companies in the country. The leadership of all these companies understand very well that if they stop practicing DEI, which means if they start hiring their employees based on merit instead of skin color, then the federal government will try to destroy them. Want proof? Here's proof. The convenience store chain Sheetz, maybe you have one near you, there's 700 locations all across the country, has just been sued by the Biden administration after they rejected the administration's attempt to shake them down with a settlement for their crime. Their crime, you ask? According to the Biden DOJ, Sheetz broke the law by refusing to hire applicants who failed their criminal background checks. Apparently, in the Biden world, criminal background checks are racist because the majority of those who fail them are black. I'm going to let you let the racism in that statement and that policy alone sink in. the assumption that blacks can't get hired because of criminal background checks, that they're going to fail. Nothing racist about that at all, is it, Joe? Is there, Joe? Again, I'm letting that stew for just a moment or two. There is something very, very seriously wrong with these people. Very seriously wrong. An employer cannot consider a criminal background check when they're hiring people to make sure that their property and their employees and their businesses are going to be safe from criminal activity because it might prejudice the hiring system against blacks. That's the same administration that says it's too difficult for a black person to cast a vote because they're not capable of getting an identification the way white people are. Just think about that one.
Number nine.
Finally, a 13-year-old girl spoke at a school board meeting and tearfully described watching a student use a Stanley cup, those hard metal cups, to brutally beat up another student. The teen girl attends Pembroke Middle School north of Philly and accused school officials of failing to stop the attack despite being warned hours ahead of time that it was coming. The attacker is a male student. A male student who identifies as a female student, calls himself Melanie, or Mel for short. Listen.
Then all of a sudden you just hear these terrible, like, loud bangs of the Stanley bouncing off her head. And then you see Mel grabbing her hair and hitting her against the table and just repeatedly hitting her with the Stanley. There was blood going everywhere. I was the table right behind it. And all you see is blood everywhere. And it was just, and then you say in your email that it was 8 minutes, but we timed it. It was 28 minutes. And we had to sit in there and watch them clean up her blood off those tables and ground. And we had to watch them take her out with blood dripping down her face. And I will never forget that.
The girl speaking said she was second on the attacker's hit list and begged school administrators for help 5 hours before the attack. The guidance counselor told her not to worry about it. The attack would never happen. One parent at that school board meeting said this was avoidable and the district failed to protect students. How are we supposed to send our children back to school? Let's be real here. There was a real and legitimate threat of violence against students that school officials ignored for one reason and one reason alone, because intervening with a trans student would have been seen as harassment against somebody in a marginalized community. That trans kid was beating girls up, this biological male, and told them, you're next on the list, you're next on the list. They reported it, and the administration ignored it. I ask you, what do you think would have been the case had it been a young male student, a white male student, who wore a GOP-themed hat or T-shirt? You think if they were reported that they were threatening to beat people up, that the school would have done something? But if it's a trans student, they've got to keep hands off. There you have it.
This has been the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio. AM 1420, The Answer.
It's 928. Attorney General Dave Yost joins us after the break on Always
The Answer.
All right, it's 936. Thanks for being with us on Always Right Radio, AM 1420, The Answer. We are awaiting a connection with Attorney General Dave Yost. We got a number of things to talk to the AG about this morning, including and especially his recent decision. Headlines all over the place this morning. In fact, Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost yesterday asked the Ohio Supreme Court to review the Michael Holbrook, that's the Franklin County Common Pleas judge, who put a temporary hold on House Bill 68, which is the SAFE Act, which, of course, passed both chambers of the General Assembly, was vetoed by Mike DeWine, was overridden, and became law, or is supposed to become law, but it has been banned or blocked from becoming law. There is a temporary injunction against it because of a lawsuit by the ACLU claiming that it is unconstitutional. So Attorney General Yost has asked the Supreme Court to narrow that a little bit, saying that one judge in Franklin County with one case should not be issuing a blockade on a law that was passed for the entire state, affecting millions of people all over the state of Ohio. And I'm told Attorney General Yost is on the line with us now, so let's welcome Dave Yost to Always Right Radio on AM 1420, The Answer. Mr. Attorney General, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Bob?
We're doing well, too. Thank you. We were just discussing, or I was just discussing a little bit about your request yesterday for the Supreme Court to take a look at Judge Holbrooke's injunction on the implementation of the SAFE Act and Saving Women's Sports Act. Can you tell us that procedure?
So it's what's called an extraordinary writ. The idea is if a judge is about to exercise or is exercising power or authority that they don't have, you can't really wait until, you know, the case is done and the appeals are exhausted to get review on that, because the damage would have been done. In this case, it's the damage of the our representative republic and our democratic processes, which passed a law by supermajority to protect children. And the judge has restrained the entire thing without a showing of harm on several of the elements, and with only two individual plaintiffs in front of him. We think it exceeds his power, and the plain text of both the civil rule and the statute on injunctions.
Attorney General Yost, what is your read on the lawsuit by the ACLU as a whole?
Well, let me start by expressing sympathy and empathy for the two plaintiffs they represent. These kids have medical appointments coming up this summer. They are distressed. Apparently experiencing gender dysphoria, and that's not an easy place to be for a kid or their parents. But at the same token, that's, and you and I have talked about this before, that's why we have laws to protect children. Children's judgment is not completely formed. They make bad decisions sometimes, and parents, candidly, I would do anything for my kids, and I, looking back, can think of instances where my desire and my love for them led me to permit things that, in retrospect, were not wise.
Yeah, and you know, they're 12, right? These girls, or boys, yes. I should say, who think they're girls. They're 12. They're suffering gender dysphoria. You're exactly right. And you know, and I don't want to litigate the entire thing here, but over and over and over again, we see adults who had gone through this at some point during their juvenile years, and who say that the cure for this is puberty. Don't block their puberty. Once they actually start developing and becoming what they biologically have always been intended to be and have always been, this kind of thing works itself out in 99% of the cases. But you have so many of these young people being guided by adults with an agenda who don't care about their own well-being. They don't care about the kids' well-being. They care about, you know, acting out an agenda.
Well, we have laws for the hard cases. The stuff that we all agree on, we don't need laws for. But we have a system in place. This law was exhaustively vetted in the legislature. All arguments were brought over and over again. They were carefully considered. And the law was changed during that process to accommodate some of those concerns. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is, that's the American system. And now we have a law that should be in effect. We can't have one judge in one county out of 88 that makes the law for 12 or 11.7 million Ohioans. If that's the case, then we ought to just scrap the legislature and the separation of powers and all the rest of the stuff and just let the judges run things. But that's not the way it works.
No, it can't work that way, and you're exactly right. I agree. One judge in one county out of 88 cannot have that kind of control and that kind of power. So you've asked the Ohio Supreme Court to review this. What does that mean in terms of time? I mean, is there a time frame here that you are asking them to come back and narrow this?
Yeah, the answer is extraordinary means extraordinary. We're going to hear when we hear. Mm-hmm. I mean, potentially we could hear, you know, any day. We might hear by the end of the day, I think it's the 24th of April, where it's supposed to go into effect. Yeah. Or we might hear 6 months from now. There just isn't any way to predict that. Okay. We have asked them to move expeditiously because the will of the people as expressed through the legislature has been stymied as to all people. You know, it's one thing, the judge does have the power on the litigants before him to protect them or to give them relief if the law is operating unjustly. But he doesn't suddenly get jurisdiction statewide.
Got it. We're talking with Attorney General Dave Yost this morning on AM 1420. The Answer. Let's pivot over to the election now. So apparently the DNC doesn't know when things are supposed to happen either. They didn't know when you had to be certified to be on the ballot in the state of Ohio. You'd think they might check that. There's only 50 states. You'd think they might check that when they schedule their convention, but they decided not to. And now they've written a letter, or they have asked Secretary of State Frank LaRose to accept a provisional certification of Biden as their nominee prior to the August 7th deadline, and then they'll give him the official one a couple of weeks later. And the Secretary of State said no. What does the Attorney General say?
Well, the Secretary of State's right. And in fact, after the pandemic, and that primary election, you may recall that the General Assembly passed a law making it a jailable offense for an executive officer to change a statute regarding elections. Frank LaRose doesn't want to go to jail, and I don't want him to go either. It's interesting because there was a Democrat activist who was out in Chicago. He's a state senator, Bill DeMora. And he said in Cleveland.com, he said, I knew this was a Hail Mary. Nobody expected this to work. Well, you know, so much from the left is just performative political theater these days. That's all this is. They knew that the law wouldn't permit this, but they wanted to get their press release, and they wanted to ask.
Yeah, and now, they are getting it. They're getting all the press. I'm sorry, Attorney General. Go ahead.
I just want to say I fully expect that Joe Biden will be on the ballot, whether that's a change in the law or there's a lawsuit or they figure out a way to move the deciding part of their convention. Obviously, they're not going to change all the hotels and everything, but they could nominate him perhaps earlier. The incumbent president of the United States is going to be on the ballot in Ohio. But on my watch, they're going to do it according to the law. Not pretend that the law doesn't exist or that it doesn't say what it says.
Yeah, well, you know, well said. It is not your responsibility to do that. First of all, Secretary LaRose can't do it by law, number one. And number two, even if he could, it is not your responsibility or the state of Ohio's responsibility to fix their mistake. You know, it is incumbent upon them, speaking of the word incumbent, a different use of it, it's incumbent upon them to know the rules and to follow them if they want to make sure that they have their, you know, their candidate on all 50 states and the territories. You know, that's up to them. That is not a Republican problem when the Democratic National Committee makes such an egregious mistake. That's their problem. So I'm glad that they're going to have to do this the right way, and that you are backing Secretary of State LaRose in this thing, because again, the law says you have to. I want to move to two other quick things. One is, where are we on the abortion ban? Is the referendum that was passed, that is, you know, is it being narrowed at all by the General Assembly? Are there parts of the heartbeat law, because I'm reading various things on this, Mr. Yost, are there parts of the heartbeat law that was the law of the land in the state of Ohio that can survive this new amendment, or is that something that the legislature is taking up?
Yeah, and we filed our answer in court about this. Like I said before the election, if issue one passes, the heartbeat prohibition on abortions is unquestionably unconstitutional at that point. That's gone. But some of the other parts are not. And, for example, the requirement for informed consent is something we're continuing to litigate. The heartbeat bill itself has a pre-existing condition or a pre-existing provision that requires the detection of the heartbeat and the informing of the patient if the heartbeat is present. We think some of these things are not an undue burden, direct or indirect. They're simply a regulation of the practice of medicine, and that those survive. So we'll be in court fighting about a number of these things and doing what we can to defend Ohio's law where it doesn't directly contradict the issue one language that was passed by the voters.
Yeah, it is obviously of great concern to a lot of people. I mean, we all saw what the people have said, and you have made statements. You know, you support the will of the people, and the will of the people by 13 points for crying out loud was to pass that thing. But again, we do need to make sure it's consistent with other rights and other protections that were already in existing law as well. So I'm glad to know that you're on that. And the last question I have for you, in the time that we have left, Mr. Attorney General Dave Yost, this is a question that was called in by an attorney who wants to know if there's anything Ohio can do in New York, that the state of New York is prosecuting President Trump illegally, and that there is apparently Statute 42, Section 1983 that prohibits that type of prosecution. It is a violation of civil rights under color of state law, and that AGs around the country should be suing the state of New York to stop that prosecution. This attorney practices in Washington, D.C., but he lives here in Northeast Ohio. He asked me to ask you, and I think it's a good idea. What's the response to that?
Well, the civil rights involved are to have counsel, to have the right of trial by jury, the right of appeal. If such a lawsuit were brought, I guarantee you that the courts would say there's not harm here at this point. Now, at some point in the future, if the jury convicts, there might be. But the process that is due is exactly what's happening. You don't have a civil right not to have a charge brought. You have a right to be heard, to defend yourself, to have an impartial finder of fact. So let me say, well, I don't like that theory under 1983, which is a catch-all civil rights section that has been actually abused, in my view, by lawyers. What's happening in New York bothers me deeply. Alvin Bragg's case is not worth the paper it's printed on, and the statute of limitations on, if there was a crime, which I don't believe there was, in this case, the statute of limitations ran long ago. He's trying to shoehorn this into a felony to get a longer statute of limitations, and his case is a house of cards. Any impartial jury is going to see through that and not bite. Now, whether this jury is that, I didn't conduct voir dire, didn't watch the voir dire, and don't really know. I do know you'll look long and hard you'd have to send out a search party to find a Trump supporter in Manhattan.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt about that. I think that's a legitimate question about whether or not he can receive a fair trial there, given that jury pool. And I understand what you mean by saying 1983 is a catch-all. This section 1983 is a catch-all, and you're not a fan. But it covers malicious prosecution, which is exactly what this looks like and sounds like. Jonathan Turley yesterday, I played this clip earlier, said it's kind of interesting. They're accusing him, and able to raise this to a felony, they're accusing him of violating campaign finance laws, using campaign cash to make this pay off and so forth. And they said it's really interesting that the same opponent that he had in 2016, Hillary Clinton, used campaign cash to fund the Steele dossier, which they used to try to create their fake Russian collusion hoax. They used campaign funds to advance a presidential campaign and to try to, dig up dirt on the opponent. And they did so with campaign finance dollars, which would be the same exact case that they're saying here, that he used campaign finance money to pay somebody off to further his presidential campaign. So the irony, or maybe the hypocrisy here, is rather thick.
It's hypocrisy for sure. And the other thing that I ought to mention to your listeners is that federal law has to be prosecuted by the Justice Department, by federal prosecutors in federal court. Bragg is, again, shoehorning this legal theory, twisting it into a pretzel, using a federal charge that the federal authorities wouldn't even bring. Does anybody seriously think that the Justice Department under Joe Biden wouldn't love to prosecute Donald Trump for hush money to a misuse of campaign funds? Of course they would. They'd jump at that if they thought that it had the slightest chance of going anywhere, and they gave it a pass. But he's taken that and, as I say, twisting the law into a pretzel. He ought to be ashamed of himself. I'm not going to vouch for everything the president has ever done in his life, but good Lord, this case is a house of cards.
A reasonable perspective that any attorney would make and I completely concur. Attorney General Yost, I know you've got to go. Thanks very much for your time this morning. We appreciate it. Keep up the good work.
Good to talk to you. Take care.
Thank you, sir. All right, that's Dave Yost joining us on AM 1420, The Answer, covering a host of issues, like I said. The biggest one is yesterday, that letter that he wrote to the Ohio Supreme Court, asking them to basically put a block on a block. In other words, to put a hold on the temporary hold that Judge Holbrooke put on the SAFE Act, which is supposed to go into effect tomorrow, trying to prevent the state from enforcing it. This is what Holbrooke is, trying to prevent the state from putting this into effect, and it can be blocked for 14 days or until there is another hearing in his court, whichever comes first. And Attorney General Rio said one guy, one judge in one county out of 88 making a decision that impacts 11.7 million people is too overly broad. If they want to narrow that for the case that has been filed in Columbus for Franklin County, maybe they can do that. But to have this affect the entire state and to halt that law from taking effect is it's unreasonable. We'll put it that way. I won't call it ridiculous, but I'll call it unreasonable, and I completely concur. So I hope he is successful there. And that, of course, impacts not just the SAFE Act, which stops the chemical castration and bodily mutilation of kids making those things illegal, but it also affects the Saving Women Sports Act, which was, as you know, they were two separate acts, but they were folded together to create HB 68, in which case young girls in the state of Ohio will have to continue to compete with boys who say they are girls until this law actually takes effect. So I'm glad that the Attorney General is trying to put a stay on the stay, if you will. And hopefully he'll be successful in that endeavor. Okay, a lot of news, like I said, on the table this morning. I ran down a very in-depth top 9 at 9. We're going to ask some of those 9, not all of them, to Peter Kersenow, who's going to be joining us after the top of the hour. Kersenow has great insights on all of these things, especially those involving the law. So we'll hit him with a few of these Ohio issues, as well as what's going on Capitol Hill, the selling out of the American people. By sending $60 billion more to a corrupt government that we simply cannot afford to send. We're going to talk to Pete about that and so much more. Stay here. It's Always Right Radio on AM 1420, The Answer.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420, The Answer. With your host, Bob France.
Hour number two underway now, 7 minutes past 10 o'clock. Seth, did you just say what I think you just said? What did you just say about the number one pizza topping in America and in the world? What did you say?
I said that pepperoni is terrible.
What are you, a communist?
No, you're a communist if you like.
What's the matter with you?
Pepperoni is the most overrated pizza topping of all time.
It is without question. I mean, it's numbers 1 through 10 on the top 10 pizza toppings. Number 11 is, I don't know, sausage or mushrooms or something. It's like it has the top 10 spaces. That's how popular it is. You realize that, right?
No, pepperoni is an overrated topping. It's crusty. It doesn't taste all that great. No, it's
well, it doesn't have to be crusty. Some of them can be crusty. It depends on what kind you get. If you get, like, you know, the what do they call those, old world pepperoni? That curl up like into a little kind of a cup kind of a thing. Those get crusty. Then there's the other kind that are, I don't even know what the differences are. But what's the matter with you?
Sausage and mushrooms are the only way to go.
Look, you can eat sausage in a variety of formats, right?
Yeah.
There's only one place in the world to eat pepperoni, and that's on a pizza. You know, I mean, seriously, you are. We're going to have you investigated.
Yeah, the pepperoni. No.
Marianne, call Attorney General Yost. Tell him I'd like to an open investigation into Seth to find out if he's got communist sympathizing leanings. Because that's kind of where I'm feeling here. What I'm feeling here. All right, maybe we'll check it out with another legal mind here. Let's see if Kersenow knows anything about that. That's right. It is time for Peter Kersenow. I'm sure can always dig pepperoni on his pizza. Peter Kersenow, will you settle this for me, please?
What is that? What's the issue? Whether pepperoni should be on a pizza or what's the issue?
How did you miss it? You're on hold. What are you doing? You're playing.
I'm trying to do work here.
Oh, you're probably in the middle of writing. You're probably in the middle of writing a chapter of one of your books while you're on hold talking. All right, Kersenow. Yeah, no, Seth said he does not eat pepperoni. He said he thinks it's terrible. It's overrated. It's the number one and numbers 2 through 10, too, I think, most popular topping on a pizza in the world. And Seth, I think he's a communist. He doesn't like it.
Well, I'm a works guy. I mean, I want everything in the world except for green peppers. I don't like green peppers on pizza, but pepperoni,
I don't like green
sausage,
peppers anywhere.
Onions, you know, right. I agree with you.
Yeah, they leak and they bleed over into every other thing there is, and it ruins the entire taste.
I don't think something is truly a pizza. I have to look in the dictionary. I'm not sure if it could be a pizza without pepperoni on it.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm talking about. Seth, this man sits on the United States Commission on Civil Rights. He's one of the most prominent attorneys in the world, and he says it can't be a pizza without pepperoni.
Well,
any response?
I've seen plenty of court cases where the attorney is absolutely wrong.
Oh, my.
So if I had to argue this one in court, I would take on Mr. Kersenow.
Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. No, trust me, you don't want this one to get in front of a jury, my friend. You're going to have 12 pepperoni lovers in front of in that jury, and you are going to come off looking, I don't know, like a one-legged man at an ass-kicking competition.
All I need is one sausage lover. Yeah.
Did I just say what I think
yes,
I just said?
Yes, you did. Thank you for that.
All right. Peter Kersenow, as noted, is a member of the United States Commission on Civil Rights. 24 years now into that, Pete?
Yeah,
right.
Yep, 24 exactly.
Years.
Yeah.
Cleveland attorney, is an author, columnist, and so much more. Okay, Pete, let's dive into the real news of the day. It's happening in New York at Columbia, also at NYU. It's happening in Connecticut at Yale. It's happening in Boston at MIT. It's probably going to happen again, even though they seem to have closed Harvard Yard for now. It's probably going to happen there, too. It's happening in Berkeley out on the West Coast. These are not your typical, you know, idiot students chanting and holding signs for a couple of hours and then going to Starbucks to waste their money. These are, we hate America, death to America, mm-hmm. death to Israel. We not only support Hamas, it's not just opposing genocide anymore, as they like to call what is happening in Gaza. It's not even genocide, but they say, you know, it's not just opposing genocide, and it's not just supporting Palestinians. It's we are Hamas, the terror group, and we believe in an end to Jews and an end to Israel and an end to America's support thereof. Pete, these are not typical protests. Something is happening right now in this country. What do you say?
Yeah, it's something very sick and disturbing, and I mean, this is not your typical protest, as you indicated. You know, we've been seeing protests, I mean, my entire lifetime. Campuses have had protests, famously in the 60s. You had anti-Vietnam protests, which some of them were really kind of despicable. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. These take on a completely different cast, though. I think these may be the worst of them all. And they're anti-American, in addition to being anti-Semitic. And in a way that is extraordinarily dangerous and troubling. because we have had recent examples of Jews being massacred and Jews being assaulted, not just in Israel, but here in the United States, people being threatened. And this is a serious, serious problem. And here we have the purported institutions of higher learning, some of the purported best in the country. And this is so widespread. It is growing, and these universities, I think, have fomented much of this because of their approach to, you know, things such as diversity and DEI and all of that stuff, where they have attacked everything except the commonality of being an American. They attack the United States of America as being an evil country. They attack different nationalities. They attack whites. The only folks they don't attack, apparently now, right now, are Palestinians. And, you know, it's really extraordinary when you watch this. Many of your listeners probably remember, because it seems like just yesterday, but some of these folks, these students, weren't even alive. Strange as it may sound, they weren't even alive at the time of 9/11. What struck me, and I think many of your listeners, the same thing. Again, I have no brief against any ethnic group or anything else like that. You know, if you're American, fine, you're on my side, and I'm going to treat you just the way I treat everybody else. But that doesn't apply to foreigners, and it doesn't apply to people who chant death to America. And right after 9/11, I remember the first thing, one of the first governments to get in touch with us, and the one who which probably provided more intelligence, more resources, more assistance, was the Israeli government. At the same time, almost before the Twin Towers had even fallen to the ground, we had numerous videos, if you don't remember, of the Palestinians cheering what was happening, that the Twin Towers were either on fire or about to fall down. And I remember being taken aback by that because, you know, we had not known anything about the sentiments in the Middle East regarding the United States because we had supplied so many billions of dollars to various regimes in various parts of the Middle East. We thought maybe they're our friends, or at least they'd be neutral. But no, they were actively cheering and, you know, massive demonstrations in support of 9/11. And so for these kids to be cheering for, especially immediately on the heels of October 7th, where we still have a number of hostages, including American hostages, and it just baffles me why the media doesn't every single day ask the you know, site, that cipher that stands in the White House press briefing room, and or the cipher that walks along the White House lawn, meaning the current alleged president of the United States. What is going on with this? What is going on? Have we turned? What happened to America? This is not the America that I remember. Now, again, I remember the Vietnam protests, but this is a different iteration of that. There's something deeply troubling about this, and nothing good is happening out of it. What's really appalling, among other things, I mean, there's many appalling things, but we have a president who's pandering to these folks because he's desperate to get votes. In other words, he is pandering to people who are chanting for the destruction of the United States of America. The commander-in-chief is pandering to this. This should be unequivocally rejected and condemned at every chance. And these university presidents have fomented this environment with the DEI crap. Bob, you and I have talked about this, and this is one, just one of the logical conclusions, and not the most, I think, dangerous one. But when you have DEI, which hates everything that is American, the only group that is, if you are non-white and non-Christian, then you're aces with the DEI crowd. And this is being taught K through 12 in colleges and has been for a number of years. Many of us were waving our arms and saying, this is incredibly stupid in addition to being dangerous. And yet they continue to do it. They thought, because they're in this cloistered environment and they all speak the same language to one another, that they were on the side of the angels. And now we see just one of the manifestations of constantly telling young people who haven't been able to formulate a thought yet that America is evil, that people, because of the pigmentation or lack thereof in their skin, are evil, that Christians are evil, and this is what we're seeing.
Yeah, that's a pretty good summation. Did you ever, I started my show yesterday in a very, very dark place, because I was watching some of the videos from over the weekend on these campuses, particularly Yale and Columbia at that time, and kind of quipped, but not in a joking way, but in a just to make a point way, that I don't know what decade this is right now, because somehow we went from the 2020s to the 1930s and early 40s, because Jewish people, in this case students, but Jewish people were being denied access to various parts of a campus. They were not allowed to pass. They were intentionally harassed and pushed and shoved. One of them was struck in the eye with a Palestinian flag. Right. They were literally being told, you are not welcome here. We're talking about identifying people as Jews, either ethnically or religious-wise, and being told, you are different, you are not allowed. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, for 80 years, the mantra has been, never again. And right. Here we are in 2024. It's kind of like it's happening again, because they're being harassed, intimidated, physically assaulted in some cases, just a few so far, about the physical assaults, while people around them are screaming death to Israel and from the river to the sea. And what were some of the other chants that they were using here? I wrote a couple of them down. Let me see if I can find them real quick here, just to kind of burn Tel Aviv to the ground was one.
They wanted 10,000 more October 7th or 1,000 more October 7th.
That wasn't being chanted, but that was something by one of the Hamas leaders, the one sitting comfortably in Qatar, protected from everything that's going on in Gaza. But on the campuses, here's one of them. We say justice, you say how, burn Tel Aviv to the ground. They like to have their little rhymes. Al-Qassam, you make us proud, take another soldier out. Al-Qassam, by the way, of course, is the military wing, if you will, of Hamas, which is all a big military wing. Hamas, we love you. We support your rockets, too. Peter, this is going on while Jews are being, like I said, blockaded, chased. I mean, you had one rabbi who is the rabbi representing 250-plus or 290-plus Jewish students at Columbia and Barnard, who told them, get off campus, leave, give them what they want, even though we shouldn't do this, give them what they want, because we cannot protect, you know, guarantee your safety. And Peter, what decade and what country is this?
Yeah, this is evil. That's the only way to describe it. It's evil. And I don't even know if that's strong enough a term. The fact that we've got supposed adults on these college campuses who can't summon it doesn't even take courage, but the intelligence to say, no mas. And if you're going to say anything like this or do something like this, you're gone from this university, never to be eligible to come back again. And there's several reasons for that, and you know, your listeners know what the reasons are. We know our history. You can't let this spark, you know, even exist. Otherwise, very quickly, it becomes a conflagration. And yet, it's stunning to me. On university campuses, you have administrators. Remember, right after October 7th at Cornell, you had that professor standing in the arts quad there saying he was exhilarated by what happened. This is not simply stupid and ahistorical. This is evil. And you shouldn't allow evil present anywhere, but particularly on college campuses. Truly extraordinary. And the fact that they are so slow to react should tell you a lot about the mentality of these people. This is that testimony before Elise Stefanik by the Pitt and Harvard and Columbia, Harvard,
MIT,
and Penn,
University of Pennsylvania. Penn, right. Yeah, right, right.
Yeah,
right.
But this is that on steroids. The fact that they don't have the moral clarity to completely, first of all, take action against any individual who does anything threatening like this, and provide the necessary protections. The fact that Jewish students feel afraid to go on campus in the United States of America in 2024, that's reprehensible. That I can't even put words. I have no words. I really don't. But I know this much. That's the supposed elite, those who masquerade as being so-called elite, have had the mask taken off, and all those clowns at all these universities and all the folks in the Biden administration who just cast a blind eye and don't raise their voices at all, and the president just shuffles along, and because he's hoping, like, nobody pays any attention to this stuff because he's got an election to win. If they can't do anything about this, they need to be rejected wholesale. And I do think we need better leadership at the university level. And we also need to just root and branch, and this is not the most important or urgent thing, but root and branch, get rid of DEI. It's one of the most divisive concepts imaginable. It leads inexorably to situations just as this. You and I have talked about this. You could see it coming a mile away if you spent more than 15 minutes on history. But apparently they're not doing that on college campuses. I don't know what they're doing. They're talking about transgenderism. They're talking about everything that has absolutely no use to a functioning civilization. But this is what arrives when you have no history whatsoever. You have no moral clarity whatsoever. You go to these college campuses. Look, I go to my university's college campus. And you notice a few things right away. First of all, many of the professors are of the same ilk of these folks. I mean, as I said, on Cornell's campus, they had the professor who said he was exhilarated right after October 7th. He was cheering what was going on. That person should have been fired right on the spot. And I won't go into any details, but I've been involved in certain issues with respect to that campus. But this should be happening across the United States. This type of moral clarity, look, we can have free speech in this country, but when it starts to bleed over to chance of killing people, there's a threat of immediate bodily harm, and also where you've got these overt threats to Jewish students that we saw immediately after October 7th, and yet nothing has really transpired. Who are these clowns? They sit on multi-billion dollar endowments. Who knows? What are they doing with them? What the heck are they doing with them? I've been involved, and I can't go into any details because I'm in the midst of different investigations with respect to the Civil Rights Commission, but what I hear, what I see is appalling. If we had more power at the Civil Rights Commission, this is really a DOJ matter. Boy, I'll tell you what, this is something I come down like an anvil on, because the spark, all you have to have is the small spark, as we saw in the 1930s, and the next thing you know, it's out of control.
Yeah, it's out of control right now, Pete. I just refreshed my screen, and as of an hour ago, violent anti-Israel agitators hurl bottles at officers, form human chain as police move in. This is on the campus of NYU. NYU is a public university, I guess, because they will not do that and cannot do that at Columbia, which is a private university.
Yeah, and why not? Why isn't Columbia inviting them on to the campus? They should be doing
that. Because the president of Columbia is a terrorist sympathizer.
Yeah,
and I say that,
exactly right.
I say that not haphazardly, because I read something about it this morning as I prepared for today's show. Somebody dug up an archived comment of hers 3 weeks after 9/11. She described terrorism as a form of protest.
Yeah,
she supports protest. Did you? Yeah, she supports protests that are terrorist acts.
I'm well aware of this. It's in the cloistered halls of academia where you're insulated from all these things. You can say stupid stuff with impunity, especially if you have a PhD after your name. You are privileged to say stupid stuff. It's almost a license to say stupid stuff. But stupid things have consequences. And so much of academia has been suffused with stupidity, with impunity for a number of years now, and now the chickens are coming home to roost. Look, if you've got a kid in any of these universities, demand some form of accountability or pull your kid out of there. Pull the tuition money out of there and demand that your elected representatives pull public funding. Many of these institutions get millions and millions and millions of dollars from the federal government to do research. No, why are we financing anti-Semitism and racism and all kinds of hatreds? This country is in really, really, what we have seen, Bob, over the last several weeks, but it's been going on for years, and you and I have talked about, you've done a great job on your show highlighting these things, but we have seen the descent of the United States of America into a country we no longer recognize. One that isn't necessarily, I mean, there are still a lot of great patriots out there, don't get me wrong, but too many, and too many institutions especially, have descended into something that's not the home of the brave anymore. It is some toxic environment that embraces anti-Americanism. And you know what? I say punch back twice as hard. I'm not advocating violence, but I think that if they do something like this, you hit them in the pocketbook, you ban them, you boycott them, you use all types of public opprobrium, every single tool you've got to make sure these clowns suffer the wrath just as the rest of America does because of their stupid ideas that they're foisting upon America.
Yeah, and, you know, Pete, I have to ask this question then, and it's kind of tough right now given the fact that we are just a couple of weeks away from the anniversary of May 4th. But Josh Hawley yesterday went on the Senate floor and called for the National Guard to be called in to Columbia University, specifically Columbia. But I think you could probably make the same argument for some of these other locations. But obviously, National Guard on college campuses calls to mind May 4th, and you certainly don't want to see it come to that. But you literally have Jewish students here who are in fear for their lives. They cannot move about freely without, you know, with confidence that they are going to be secure. Police aren't able to come onto the campuses. So he's saying send the National Guard. Would you?
Yeah. I don't have any compunctions about doing that. Look, I was alive back during Kent State. I was alive during that period of time. What's happening now probably will lead to something like that, not involving the National Guard, unless we take appropriate action. Where are the adults? And we have to be tough about this. We can't brook any nonsense. And that's what we're getting, a lot of nonsense from people who should know better. These college administrators and others who seem impotent to take action against overt threats of death to Jewish students and others, too. And this, look, you have a First Amendment right, but I have a First Amendment right to call you out on the fact that you're saying death to America. Personally, I'm not advocating violence, but I wouldn't be very pleased if somebody said that to my face.
Yeah, I completely concur. Peter, we'll take a time out here. It's bottom of the hour. We've got a lot more to talk about. Stay here. It's Always Right Radio on AM 1420.
And the answer.
Okay, 10:36. We continue now with Peter Kersenow commentary time on AM 1420, The Answer. Okay, Pete, let's move away from what's going on domestically to what's going on overseas. We just spent we don't have $61 billion to give anybody. We had to borrow $61 billion on Saturday from China so that we can then send it to Ukraine so that they can defend their own border and put together lucrative retirement packages for their bureaucrats. Not joking about any of that, by the way. It was a part of the $95 billion package put together by Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, who might as well just go ahead and declare that he is a Democrat. He's working with Democrats. He is doing Democrat spending. He was doing Democrat bidding. He is absolutely the opposite of what he was billed to be when he got the gavel after they booted Kevin McCarthy. There are calls for him to be removed. Obviously, that would be devastating to the Republican Party, with just 6 months to go until the election. But then again, if the Republican Party is being led by a Democrat holding the gavel, what difference does it make anyway? What are your thoughts on what happened on Saturday and this the complete and total dysfunction of this party?
Yeah, it's dysfunctional. I think that I had high hopes for Mike Johnson. They were dashed a while back. And, the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world and others who seem to like to shoot themselves in the foot or shoot the party in the foot because they've got this ideological, they have this litmus test. It's not even an ideological litmus test. I don't know what it is, but it's not anything that I recognize. I think I may have said this before. I know I've said it to others. I probably agree with Marjorie Taylor Greene and some of the other bomb throwers on almost every substantive item. And probably they're a little to the left of me on some items. But it's the approach. I saw Newt Gingrich talking about this, who I think is one of the savviest mechanics of politics around. I mean, by that I mean he knows how to make the trains run on time, so to speak. And he was devastating. But you don't have to be a Newt Gingrich with all of his experience in Congress to look at what's going on, see the complete and utter dysfunction of the Republican Party. When they get a majority, what's the difference? What's the difference? Except they have a chance to beclown themselves and take the credit for beclowning themselves. So here we are. I think that there's so much to talk about with respect to the funding issues, the Ukraine funding issues, and so many other things that are being held up. I don't even know where to begin, to tell you the truth. I'm disgusted with the only folks I'm not disgusted with are folks like a Chip Roy and others who have the strength or at least the commitment to conservative principles that Marjorie Taylor Greene and others purport to have, but he's got the smarts and the technical savvy to do the right thing. But I don't know about the rest of the Republican Party. Why vote for a Republican if what we get is just utter chaos? I still say we've got to vote for Republicans because chaos may be better than the sheer evil that the Democrats would visit upon us. But nonetheless, we're in bad shape all across the board going into this upcoming election.
Yeah, and you know, Pete, if you want to get even more frustrated by it, I want to throw some information to you that was most people don't know about what was in this $61 billion that we are sending to Ukraine. And I had a really interesting debate yesterday with a Catholic priest from the Ukrainian, Ukrainian Orthodox Church. Is that Catholic? One of the Ukrainian Orthodox.
No, it's Orthodox. It's Orthodox, but you know they've got it's a different icon, but it's very very similar to Catholicism.
Yeah,
I mean I'm not going to go into all the ecclesiastical reasons.
No, that's okay. Yeah, but I just wanted to identify the father who called me and was telling he was really really upset with my commentary on how we should not be sending this money to Ukraine because it's a corrupt government. It is a corrupt government, and nobody wants to acknowledge that fact. They canceled their elections. Volodymyr Zelensky has a vested interest in keeping this war going because according to the Ukrainian constitution, they can choose to cancel elections as long as the president has declared martial law, such as in the case of a war. So 89% of Ukrainians in the most recent survey from over 135 provinces of Ukraine say that the biggest problem that that Ukraine faces is government corruption. 78% of the people in those surveys said that Volodymyr Zelensky is responsible for that corruption. So that means it sounds to me like if there was an election, a free election in that country, he would be voted out. And yet we're calling this a democracy. It's not a democracy in any way, shape, or form. It's a corrupt autocracy, number one. And number two, here's where our $61 billion are going, Pete. $14 billion go for weapons, which if you are, you know, if your position is support, you know, Ukraine's army and military against Russian and they need weapons. Okay, I guess, if you want to do that. I mean, we're still $170 billion, I think, in before this new outlay. We're now up
to
$230 billion.
For my pension plan also, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, let me get to that one, Peter. That $15 billion is for intelligence sharing and training. I don't know how it takes $15 billion to do it, more than it even for the weaponry, intelligence sharing and training. $8 billion is in this package for Ukrainian government pensions, retirement packages for their bureaucrats, $8 billion American dollars, rather $8 billion from China that goes on the American tab, and then $300 million for Ukrainian border security, $0 million for American border security,
right.
$300 million for Ukrainian border security. But that part, Peter, tell me how in the living world they can claim that we're pro-Putin and pro-Russia if we don't pony up money for the retirement packages for Ukrainian government officials. And how come that wasn't noted on the floor during the debate before that vote that Johnson ramrodded through? How come the American people continue to take it in the shorts in order to aid a corrupt country with a corrupt leader that has a vested interest in keeping a war going?
Because the swamp is in charge. There are huge financial interests at play, not just in the defense establishment, but in other areas also. There's ideological reasons, too. But it's mainly a Democrat inside the Beltway enterprise. By inside the Beltway, I would include a lot of Republicans in that. And it's a travesty. It truly is. You went through the litany of everything. I really don't have much to add to that whatsoever. But again, we're spending billions of dollars, as you indicated, on somebody else's border, none on our border, or very little on our border, and we're being told to just shut up and take it. We need immediately to take some... This is horrendous what's happening here. No one, I think, despises, hates a Vladimir Putin more than you and I, Bob. I think almost everybody in your listening audience is not a babe in the woods. We know he's an evil person. We don't countenance and we don't cheer on invasion of any sovereign nation, period. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that we just open up our pocketbooks to fund Ukraine in defense. I mean, what's the end game? I don't know what the end game is with respect to pensions. Number two is, how much more? We've already spent billions and billions. There's no way, every analyst out there says, there's no way in the world that Ukraine's going to defeat Russia. Probably the best outcome we can hope for is that we just kind of have a truce. And I'm not advocating for this. Look, I think what Putin did is awful. And that's the thing. It's almost as if you say, hey, look, we don't want to, you know, fund this anymore. It's almost as if you're saying that you're in favor of Vladimir Putin and Russia. No, we're not. We're simply saying, hold it. Those are my tax dollars, and I'm not sure this is the best use of them right now, especially considering that Ukraine is corrupt, a corrupt country. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. But somebody explain to us what's the end game here. And the end game probably is that the current lines will simply be, you know, status quo from now on. Is that preferable? No, it's not. You know, but things happen in the world that are not preferable. You don't always get what you want. But the United States of America can't be funding every conflict in the world and neglecting our own situation here, which is getting increasingly precarious. Everything from crime to national debt, you name it. I can't even list all the things that we have problems with here in this country. And yet we're out here, the Republicans are rushing to fund Ukraine border, got absolutely nothing for our border after we, look, there are more people who've come into the United States over our border illegally, 8 to 10 million, we don't even know how many actually, 8 to 10 million than there are Russians who've crossed the Ukrainian border. Yet they get tens of billions of dollars, we get nothing for our border. It's a travesty. Thousands have died because of our failure to secure the border. Thousands more will die. We have terrorists coming across the border. We have Chinese coming across the border. We have Russians coming across the border. Every one of our enemies knows that it's an open door and they're taking advantage of it because they only have a window of opportunity that goes till November or December. They know that. So this is horrendous. We're being sold out by our political leadership, but also our elites. We've seen it on college campuses. We see it at the top levels of our corporations. The elites who've all gone to these Ivy League schools, or not all gone to the Ivy League schools, but they've gone to these schools where they've been indoctrinated in anti-Americanism, and here's the result. And on top of that, within the Beltway itself, and I've spent a little bit of time there, and I still am there all the time, what you see there is something completely and utterly alien to what we out here in the hinterlands believe to be the United States of America. Their view of America is completely different from ours, and it has nothing, very little to do with patriotism and red, white, and blue. It has to do with green in some respects, but I don't simply want to say it's a matter of avarice and greed. There's an ideology, and it's not necessarily just a left-wing ideology, but there's an inside-the-beltway ideology, a swamp ideology, that has very little to do with the best interests of America, but has much to do with the best interests of those within that elite group, their power interests and their monetary interests as well, as long as in addition to their policy interests, too. But we're being poorly served by many of our elite institutions these days, and we're seeing the consequences. We cannot continue to go down this path this much longer. Because we're such a big and strong nation, I forgot who had said there's much ruin in a nation, but because we're so big and strong, yeah, we can take a lot of slings and arrows. We can take a lot of stupidity and stupid policy choices, but there's a limit to those policy choices, even for the United States of America. And we're, I think, I would suspect that we're close to the precipice right now.
Yeah, I completely concur. We are. Peter Kersenow is our guest. It's 10:47. Time probably for another topic here, Pete, maybe two. We'll see where it goes. You mentioned DEI a couple of times in the last conversation we were having about what's going on the college campuses. This is in the corporate world. It turns out every single one of the Fortune 100 companies, 100% of them, no outliers, has a public commitment to DEI on their website.
Yeah.
The leadership of these companies understand, apparently, that if they stop practicing DEI, if they start hiring based on merit and based on qualifications as opposed to skin color or other immutable characteristics that you have absolutely no control over, then the Joe Biden administration will try to destroy them. Evidence of that, the convenience store chain Sheetz. Over 700 locations across the country. They apparently aren't doing a good enough job with DEI, so the Biden administration is suing them. Why? What was their crime? Pete, they broke the law, says the Biden administration, by refusing to hire applicants who failed their criminal background checks.
Yeah.
According to the Biden administration, the same administration that thinks that asking for an ID to vote is racist because blacks can't possibly be expected to know how to get identifications. Well, apparently blacks don't know how to not commit crimes, too, because criminal background checks have been deemed to be racist because the majority of those who fail them are black. Peter, take it.
Yeah, well, you know, this is something that's been going on for a while. We had two big hearings at the Civil Rights Commission about 10, 11 years ago on this. And the theory is, of course, that a criminal background check requirement and or a requirement that a company has that says you can't have, you know, certain types of criminal convictions and work at that establishment has a what's known as a disparate impact against blacks, who tend to have criminal records at a higher percentage rate than other ethnic groups. And, you know, it varies. Asians hardly have any, you know, criminal background records. Whites are second, and then Hispanics, and then blacks. So the idea is disparate impact, it's racist. Any kind of job requirement has to be job-related. And what I've said, and when we first started having hearings on this issue years ago at the Civil Rights Commission, 15 years ago at least, you know, I'm a labor and employment lawyer, I do this for a living. The question I have is, wait a minute, are you telling me that having a criminal conviction is not job-related? Yes. What they will tell you is, well, if somebody has a theft conviction and he's doing a job where there can be no theft possibility, he's working as who knows what, but something that doesn't go along with, there's no way in the world you can steal something. Well, you're working at a heavy machine, whatever it may be. But my argument has always been, well, if you have a criminal record, that may be, I'm not saying it should be necessarily equivocally off the eliminate you from consideration, but it may also be indicative of other personality issues or predilections, okay? It's one of the best indicators we have, and we also see an extremely high recidivism rate among those who've got a criminal conviction, and you don't want somebody who goes off and he's working for 2 months, the next thing you know, he's you know, being arrested again. So these, in my estimation, there are certain exceptions here and there, but in most cases, having a requirement not to have a criminal conviction makes perfect sense, and it goes beyond simply the safety issue and other related issues. It is one indicator among many of a person's character. If somebody has a criminal conviction, it shouldn't be necessarily a complete prohibition, but it gives you an idea that this person may not be the most reliable person in the world. Again, people reform, and I think you take things on a case-by-case basis, but to do what the Biden administration did, and that is to sue Sheets because of this provision that says, hey, look, we don't hire people with certain levels of criminal convictions, tells you the ideology has overcome intelligence and tells you that they are it's almost as if they are purposely trying to destroy the United States of America, that they're doing things appealing to the worst common denominator among us. Rather than setting standards high, they try to eliminate all standards, and we're seeing it across the country. We're seeing it in so many cases where it's not simply just criminal convictions, but we're limiting standards so we can't get good employees. Talk to employers out there. I mean, I do all the time because I'm a labor lawyer. They're having greater difficulty getting qualified individuals for, among other reasons, things such as the inability to have, in certain circumstances, criminal background checks without the Biden administration suing you into oblivion. The country has got multiple problems, and almost every one of those problems, strangely enough, you can draw a straight line from some idiotic progressive policy prescription. I mean, these guys get together in some Ivy League institution, sit around in some type of seminar, come up with these brilliant ideas, pat themselves on the back, have some Merlot, and say, boy, how brilliant we are, and then visit this stupidity on those of us who actually have to live in the real world with real-time consequences. These kinds of, in my estimation, again, I'm just a member of the Civil Rights Commission. I wrote, you know, statements and dissents with respect to this when we had these issues before the Civil Rights Commission. But if I became somebody who's in a position to get rid of these things, I would do it in a heartbeat. These are brain dead, and I would let employers not discriminate on the basis of race, but discriminate on the basis of competency, discriminate on the basis of criminal background, discriminate on the basis of all host of issues, and not say that automatically a place like Sheets that's trying to do the best they can, not just for themselves, but for their customers. You don't want somebody behind the counter who has a criminal background that you're not aware of, and next thing you know, you've got liability because the person assaulted a customer or somebody else. These are the kind of things real employers have to face on a real-time basis all the time, but the folks manning the stations in Washington, the bureaucracy, the EEOC have no clue.
None. Nope. Very well. Yeah, you're exactly right. And the idea that there is a lawsuit against a company saying you didn't hire right because you considered the safety of your fellow employer, your employees, as well as the security of your business, is simply, and you're right, by the way, I understand about recidivism. I understand about how, you know, people who are coming out need to be able to get an opportunity, depending on what their circumstances are, of course, in order for them to not, you know, want to return to a life of crime. I get all of that, and I agree with you 100%, but this is insanity. The suggestion, and it's also just blatant racism to say that a criminal background check is by its very nature racist because more blacks are criminals than whites. That's the Biden administration, and yet Trump is called
racist. Yeah, and they're parsing things. Look, 14.5% of blacks have a criminal background. 13.5% of multiracial, 13% of Indian. I mean, it's not that big a difference. It really isn't.
Which is what makes it so absurd to just say that if you aren't hiring more minorities, because of this criminal background situation, then we have to punish you for it. Pete, let me get one more quick question in here for you, Pete. It's already 10:55. Trump should be campaigning. Instead, he's sitting in a courtroom in one of the most ridiculous trials. Even the opening statements yesterday, according to virtually every attorney who watched them, they're all saying the same thing. Why are we here? This is unbelievable. Yep. It is completely inappropriate, and it's an affront to the legal system. But he's supposed to be out on the campaign trail as opposed to in the courtroom, and Biden is out on the campaign trail. How about that? They tether Trump to a courtroom and then let Biden out of the basement, which is really interesting. And here's why. Latest poll from NBC, not Fox, not a push poll by some right-leaning organization. This is an NBC poll. Which candidate is better at handling a crisis? Trump, +4. Strongest record as president? Trump, +7. Competent and effective? Trump, +9. Necessary mental and physical health? Trump, +19. And Pete? Dealing with inflation and cost of living, the things that every American feels every day, Trump +22. This is an NBC poll. Now you know why they have him locked up in a courtroom.
And I think it's backfiring on them. I think they miscalculated because Trump is actually getting more attention nationally because of this. It's not like an ordinary candidate who has to go out and he'll campaign in Michigan, so the Michigan media will cover him. This is a national issue every single day, and Trump is playing it beautifully. He comes out at the end of the day and makes some statements. He goes to places like Harlem and other places like that, and he appeals. People are getting it. People get when something is unfair. We've heard for so long about how Trump and Republicans generally are threats to democracy, and people can see in real time who the real threat is. These folks who are prosecuting the former president and current leading candidate for the presidency of the United States on the basis of some tremendously contrived, I can't do better than Alan Dershowitz on this or some of the others, so I'm not going to repeat it. These are the most ridiculous, contrived issues imaginable, and everyday Joes get it. That's why when he goes to Harlem, meaning Trump, he gets cheered. People get this stuff. They know when something is wrong. You're always going to have that unmovable 45% to 48% of people who are rabid anti-Trump people. They're not going to change, and you're not going to move them at all. But for that narrow sliver that decides elections, I think they've made a huge mistake because you're getting more blacks, especially black males. I've written about this on NRO. I'm still a little skeptical about the margin, but nonetheless, there's without a question a migration toward Trump. Huge migration among Hispanics. So the groups that the Democrats typically depend on are saying, what the heck are you guys doing? This is fundamentally unfair. Americans don't like unfairness.
Well, I hope what you just said is exactly right, that Americans will be so disgusted by the unfairness of it all that it does indeed backfire on them. Of course, after this one is over, there's three more waiting in the wings. So they're doubling and tripling and even quadrupling down on their belief that this will help them win. Peter Kersenow, always a pleasure to listen to your analysis. Thank you, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, there's Kersenow. And by the way, Seth, Kersenow said pepperoni belongs on pizza. We'll be back.
Conditions apply.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This
is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
Onward. We continue now on AM 1420, The Answer. Appreciate you being with us this morning. Great stuff by Peter Kersenow. Really appreciated the conversation with Dave Yost, our Ohio's Attorney General, in hour number one. If you missed either one of those interviews and conversations, you may hear them again at WHKRadio.com, or rather hear them for the first time or listen to them again at WHKRadio.com about an hour after the end of the show. Very important stuff all the way around. I want to go back to the Ukraine story because it was the number, well, it's kind of, in my view, it's right there. Funding Ukraine's pension funds for their government officials rather than taking America's tax dollars and spending them on Americans and our security is borderline treasonous. It can't be actual treason because Ukraine is not a designated enemy of the United States. We're not at war with Ukraine. In fact, we are supporting Ukraine's war effort against Russia. And I do support the supporting of that war effort. But there have to be limitations, as you know, as we've discussed forever and ever. But the idea that our tax dollars should be going to fund this particular war and this particular country at this particular time is tied to me with what's going on here in the United States and the violent anti-Israel and anti-Semitic protests and demonstrations and attacks and you know occupations of quads and squares and so forth on college campuses, kind of right up there. These are the top two things going on right now. And I want to focus on the Ukraine one for a little while longer. Tucker Carlson, on one of his latest podcasts, he does his own podcast now. Tucker Carlson was discussing and explaining and kind of spelling out some of the expenditures that I talked about earlier about the $8 billion of American tax money going to fund the pensions of Ukrainian bureaucrats. It's just, it's enough for me right then and there. But he had on an international human rights lawyer by the name of Bob Abs Amsterdam, who is an international, as I said, international human rights lawyer. He's no Russian asset. They like to say anybody who is opposed to the continued funding of the Ukraine war effort by the United States is being, you know, pro-Putin. Anybody who opposes that is obviously for a reestablishment of communism and the Soviet bloc and so on and so forth. And it's insane. And I, by the way, have evolved my views over the course of the last 2 years since this whole thing began. Like I said, I interviewed a Ukrainian soldier from the ground in Kyiv, or actually outside of Kyiv, when this whole thing began. And I gave him my unconditional support, and I said, yes, the Americans should help provide a few things for them at that point in time, and didn't know much about the reason for the invasion and everything else. But what we have learned about the Ukrainian government since then has changed things immensely for me. So, point being, this war effort is being backed by the United States financially, as is a number of other things in that very, very corrupt government. And Bob Amsterdam is a lawyer who is very familiar with Ukraine. And he appeared on Tucker. He has been banned from Russia by Vladimir Putin, by the way. So it's not as if he is some sort of a, you know, like I said, some sort of a Putin stooge or pro Russia figure. He says that Ukraine is the single most repressive country he's ever been to. He says it is the furthest thing from a democracy. The idea that it's a democracy is a farce. He says they've been lying to us, and we are paying a price for it, a literal price of, so far, $230 billion American dollars borrowed from China and some of our other creditors. And so I want you to listen to a little bit of this. Maybe you're tired of hearing it from me. Let's hear it from somebody who's been on the ground, somebody who knows what's going on inside and out in Ukraine, who can talk about the repressive government there, talk a little bit about the corrupt government there. And again, it's important to note that corruption, because you think that your money is going to, you know, put a gun in the hands of a freedom fighter to oppose the Russians. You think that your money is going
to buy tanks and to buy guns and you know munitions and vehicles and so forth, things that they need in order to be able to carry out this campaign of self-defense against the Russians. You think that's where your money's going, but you'd be wrong. And that's why I think it's important to listen to this. I listened to it with great interest yesterday, and I think you should listen to some of it right now.
Church that was founded 5 years ago. However, elements within the government have declared war on the UOC, and they have persecuted mercilessly priests, clerics, parishioners. And I knew that it was a tremendous risk to go to Ukraine after having spoken out so strongly against this attack. But I had to go because I had to make sure that given the amount of money the Ukrainians are spending defaming anyone who contradicts their version of reality, I had to make sure that I saw, you know, what was happening on the ground. And after 10 days in Ukraine, I can tell you that there is not a hint of democracy. The country is run by an organization called the SBU, the secret police, heavily infiltrated even today by Russia. The parliamentary members, I met with eight, they are under incredible pressure from the secret police. In fact, they were all interviewed and interrogated after I left. A number of them had previously been subjected to interrogations. The priests I met a number of them who had been beaten and interrogated in the past. And in fact, one of them, after my meeting with him, had his home raided the next day, and he was dealt with so harshly, he suffered a heart attack. I was followed everywhere. Ukraine not only has shut the media, but they have become a font of disinformation. They just spent $3.5 million in Washington to tell Americans that everything they're doing to the Ukrainian Orthodox Church isn't happening. And that, in fact, it's the Russians who are persecuting Christians and not them. To which I say any persecution of Christians is wrongful, but it is to Ukraine that professes democracy and freedom. And it is Ukraine that has absolutely no semblance of rule of law, that is terrorizing its own business community separately, targeting wealthy people for expropriation, especially if they have any religious connection to our church. And it is Ukraine that is actively setting the SBU, secret police, on individuals like myself who speak out on behalf of this religion. And let me tell you, since the passage of the bill in the House, Ukraine has gone into full war mode against my church. They are launching a massive PR campaign internally and again in Washington, attacking the church, attacking me, attacking everyone connected with the church because they can't stand the truth to come out. So what is shameful about our American conduct is what Robert Destro, the former Undersecretary for Human Rights, said, which is that some of this targeting of the church came from Washington, that it was partially planned because Washington saw our church, which had a spiritual connection to Russia, as somehow being a threat. And I want to stress that our church is Ukrainian. Many of the men on the front line are members of our church who sit there and watch day by day as secret police wearing death masks come and steal their religious home. Imagine how they feel knowing that their parents and their families are losing their places of worship. And if a new bill is passed, Bill 8371, they won't even be able to gather to pray because the churches will be taken from them, but it may even be a crime for them to meet and pray. This unlimited attack on this historic church is unconscionable, and I am absolutely heartbroken that American Christians have not taken up this fight.
So instead
and
of American...
And then there's 300
okay, stop,
million.
Stop, stop. Americans, instead of taking up that fight, we're sending all of our money to the government that is being run by the secret police that is indeed doing the, carrying out those acts against the church. Yesterday, I got into a very, very, interesting discussion with the priest who called to tell me that, no, we have to support Ukraine. We have to continue in the name of the church. We have to continue giving them tens of billions of our dollars, so far $230 billion of our dollars, while they are actually tormenting the church, while they are persecuting, while they are absolutely coming down upon the faithful there. It's unbelievable. And I'm done. And I'm done. J.D. Vance is right. I am right. People who are suggesting it is time to end this spigot, to shut off this spigot of money that just goes to Volodymyr Zelensky, who is leading one of the most corrupt governments in Europe. Not just in Europe, maybe, but in the world. And they have the rest of us bamboozled, completely fooled. And I am not an isolationist. I am not a non-interventionist when it comes to various things around the world. Obviously, when it comes to protecting ourselves against foreign adversaries that are directly attacking our interests, whether it be in our allies, strategically, militarily, economically, and so forth, yeah, we have to be ready to go. We have always been the world police. We have to be ready to go for certain things, but there are other things that we have to be willing to say, nope, not this one. And while we did indeed support the Ukrainian effort as the invasion by Russia started, and I still do not back down from that, there has to be an end to this, especially now that we have learned more. We know so much more now about who that government is and what it is and what the people there really are going through than we ever knew before. All right, if you have thoughts on it, 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. Tanya is up in Akron on AM 1420, The Answer. Hi, Tanya, go ahead.
Wow, that was a whole lot, Bob.
Yeah, right?
But we knew that. Yeah, I heard your conversation yesterday with the priest. I'm like, you are so into the Ukraine. Where is God in all of this? But that's what we've been talking about with these Jewish, what's going on campuses.
Mm-hmm.
So my idea for the campuses is almost like my idea for the Democratic Convention. You know, they should reschedule it for August in East Palestine.
Yes.
I think every student that... is protesting at our elite universities. The ones that are not, the ones that are on the green cards, they get to go home on our dime. The ones that are citizens of the United States, guess where I would send them? I would send them on a, let them be transfer students in every country of the world other than the United States and let them stay there for a year. And if they don't like it, they can be suspended for a whole year.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I don't like the idea of suspended. I like the idea of expelled. And I'm very, very sorry, but sorry.
Okay.
Boot
like
them completely expelled from the campuses. Anybody that is engaging in this sort of terrorism sympathizing in terms of what they're calling for, but then also terrorism of Jewish students on campus. To me, there is no place for them there. If they want to transfer to the University of Tehran, go for it. Have a good time, but you are no longer going to be on our campus ever.
Yeah, so that's basically it. Just get them out and get them off that campus altogether, let the campus breathe. But for the parents of the Jewish students, I will be taking the example of what happened in Michigan with the young man, even though I don't like the precedent it set of having parents be responsible for what their children do. They should start suing the parents of the children that are harming their kids.
Well, what's every situation is
a point in time where we're responsibility.
No, I know that. I know that, but I just don't know, Tanya, and we can't know with any degree of certainty because every situation is different. But most parents probably think that if they are willing to and able to find the money to put their kids into a $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year school like those Ivy League schools, because of the degree that they're going to get and what that represents, that they're helping set up their child for life, they probably don't think they're sending their kid into what's going to turn into an ideological war zone, or at least some of them don't. Like I said, that's why we can't speak with certainty here. But they probably think, I'm doing the right thing by putting my kid in a school where he's going to have a degree that's going to help him write his own ticket or her own ticket to a great career for the rest of their life. I don't know if I want to hold them accountable. What I'm thinking is those parents, the ones who maybe were a little naive about what those campuses were all about, now that they see those campuses are allowing their kids and, in fact, incentivizing or indoctrinating those kids into this horrific protestation and calls for genocide and support for terror groups, I almost think the parents ought to be able to sue the university for what they've allowed to happen to their kids. Just depends on the parent.
I think that children that are coming from working class backgrounds to actually get into those schools, they may still have some honor and integrity not to embarrass their parents. You know, we're looking at little Omar's daughter. Yeah, she knows exactly what she's doing.
Oh, yeah, she's one of the biggest voices and the biggest mouths out there. She got it from her mother, and she is more anti-Semitic than even mom is.
And every time they show pictures of Antifa, once they get their masks off, they're not working class parents. These are elitist parents, I mean, children of elite that are doing this because they have nothing else to do.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think you're right. And those parents, Tanya, that's why I kind of, was leaving that room qualifying it. And thank you for the call, dear. I appreciate you very much. Those parents are the ones that, yeah, maybe you hold them accountable somehow because they are contributing to the problem. The elite parents who are sending their elitist parents who are sending their kids in there to be a part of that mess. Different story than the ones who send their kids just to get a good degree or an education and a degree from an elite university that's going to help them set them up the rest of their lives, who find out then that this university corrupted their child, turned their child into a tablecloth wearing freak show out there screaming about how much they hate Jews. Those parents, kind of almost have a course or a cause of action against the universities for what they did. Tanya, thank you. Conrad is next in Middleburg Heights. Conrad, go right ahead.
Hello?
Yes. Hi, Conrad. Go ahead.
Hi. I think we need to remember to not let the corporate media always define language for us, or the left. The people that we're talking about are not anti-Israeli student demonstrators. They're Nazi youth, and we should call them Nazi youth.
I think that's a good description. And somebody made that. Somebody in Congress said that these are the... No, it wasn't Congress. It was former Speaker Newt Gingrich. I actually had that clip. was yesterday. Then, yeah, he did. He said, these are the Nazi youth of 2024. That is exactly right.
So call them that on your show.
Yeah, I will. I will absolutely do that. I have no problem whatsoever with calling that what it is. Listen, and thank you for the call, Conrad. Listen, I'm the guy who said to Peter Kersenow, and I'm the guy who said yesterday on my show that what I'm seeing on these college campuses was already done. It was done in the 1930s. It was done in Nazi Germany. It was done when they invaded Poland and France and Czechoslovakia and the rest of Central and Eastern Europe. This was done already. We've seen this movie, and we know how it ended. It is absolutely eerily similar. Turning up the hatred, turning up the volume on the hatred of Jews, which led to, obviously, the attempted extermination of all European Jewry, as it was called. That's what we're seeing right here. When you're cheering Hamas, and Hamas just committed the worst terror attack since Nazi Germany on Jewish people back on October 7th, when you're cheering them on and saying, we support you, Hamas, we support you, we support your rockets too, we love what you're doing in killing Jews, how is it anything less than Nazism and thus the youth of Nazism, Nazi youth? Hitler's proteges. And yet they call Trump Hitler. 11:27, we'll be back.
And the answer.
All right, it's 11:36. We got time for a few more phone calls before the end of the broadcast at 11:45, when we ask O'Reilly to carry it to the top of the hour into some Charlie Kirk, who has been on fire lately. Dennis Prager, obviously, Sebastian Gorka this afternoon too. Let's go to the phones. We'll go to who's been waiting the longest here, Marianne? Is it Tony? I think in South Euclid. All right, let's see if Tony's got it together today. Tony, you're on the air. Go right ahead. Hello, Tony. Yep,
yes, I always have it together. Tony from South Euclid. Listen, you know what I'd like to hear more? Just a request. I would like to hear more why Hamas or why any organization, anybody, why they truly hate the Jews. And I'd like it to be talked about more, and maybe more guests on your show that can explain and hear about it more and let people have a clear understanding what their true hate is about the Jews.
You know, I asked Dennis Prager that question, and, you know, there is no single answer. A lot of the people who have hated the Jews throughout the decades and really throughout the centuries have different reasons, you know, and they range from, you know, a lot of the stereotypes about them being controlling of the financial systems and therefore responsible for any plight that people may find themselves in, which, again, is a stereotype. But a lot of it stems back to religion and the fact that the Jews are referred to as God's chosen people in the Bible. You know, and the overwhelming number of, you know, people in this country and maybe around the world, and I probably shouldn't say overwhelming, because around the world, Islam and Hindu, because of the massive populations of places like India, you know, they are not necessarily Christian or Jewish. But the Judeo-Christian domination, particularly of the West, you know, everybody knows about the Bible, and everybody knows that the Jews are considered to be, and they consider themselves to be, you know, God's chosen people. And to some, that hits them wrong, and it strikes them as being, you know, less than, and that the Jews consider themselves to be superior, and so they're hated out of jealousy for such reasons. So there's no single one reason, Tony, why everybody, why did I say everybody? There's no single one reason why anti-Semites are anti-Semitic. They are wide and they're varied.
Is this true? Is this the true hate of the true answer from Hamas?
Probably, I would say, you know, Iran is funds Hamas. You know, Iran is a Muslim theocracy. You know that Islam has declared specific intent to wipe out all Jews, because historically they, first of all, they do not believe in Judaism. They believe in Islam. They believe in Muhammad. They believe in Allah, as God. And the Jews, having had such a long history, long before Islam was ever even founded or even thought of, they have been wanting to wipe out all things Jew. That's why it's in, you know, Islamic, it's in Iran charter, it's in Hamas's charter, it's in Hezbollah's, and so on and so forth. So all of these organizations that have been threatening to wipe out Jews have done so largely, not all, obviously, because look at Hitler, but largely in, when it comes to the Middle East and Israel, they're Islamic driven. They're Islamic, yeah, theocratically driven.
Yeah, and I agree with you, but the such extreme, and this is such an extreme sense, that yeah. I'd like to hear from some theologians, or I'd like to hear from a lot of different people, and even maybe some of the guests from the Hamas side or Palestinian side or from the colleges, and have them come on there and say, what is it that you really, really hate about the Jews? We'd like to hear it.
Yeah. Well, and the one thing, and thank you, Tony, for the call. I appreciate it. It's a very good call, and it's a very good question. Like I said, I've asked it myself, and I've tried to get answers from a variety of different places, on radio shows, TV shows, and also just through reading. They have written. They have written about it. The anti-Semites and those who hate Israel and hate Jewry, they have written about it. And like I said, a lot of it is religiously driven. It's a religious conflict between Islam and Judaism. But that, of course, doesn't explain Hitler, and it doesn't explain what was done and what continues to be done largely here. The real problem to me is, if you were to ask, you know, 1,000 students on all of these campuses that are protesting Israel, ask them why they hate Jews, they wouldn't have an answer, because they're too stupid. They don't know. They don't study their history. They don't study the reality of who these people are, what their culture is all about. They don't study it. They follow the left-wing crowd. The progressives say Palestinians are being killed by the Jews. There's a horrible why am I failing on the word now? Genocide. There's a horrible genocide now being carried out by the Jews against Palestinians, so they just follow right along and scream, yo, anti-Israel, go Hamas, kill the Jews, because the Jews are trying to commit genocide and keeping the Palestinian people in an open-air prison. Ask them how it's an open-air prison. They'll have no idea. Ask them who's responsible for the blockades. They'll have no idea. Ask them about how Israel came to be and ask about its history. They'll have no idea. Ask them where Palestine is on a map. They'll have no idea, because they'll think there is a place and there isn't one. They're just stupid. They're young and stupid and brain dead. That's the reason they do what they do. Sorry about all that, but that needed to be said, I think. Beth is in Ashtabula next. Hi, Beth. Thank you for waiting. Go right ahead.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Wonderful, Beth. Thank you.
Okay. The whole thing with the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, I didn't hear your interview with the priest, so I'm not sure which jurisdiction he was from. But the Ukrainian Orthodox Church has always been under the jurisdiction of the Russian Patriarch. So when all of this started heating up in 2018, Poroshenko decided, well, let's have a new Orthodox Church that's not tied to Moscow. So they started a new church, and it's tied to the Patriarch of Constantinople. And these two churches have been at each other's throat to begin with here. And the one that's still tied to Russia was the largest of the two. And currently, the government over there has been really persecuting the ones that are still tied to the Russian Patriarch. We've got churches in this country that are under the Russian Patriarch. It doesn't mean that, you know, they claim that these priests were spying for Russia and all this stuff, and they have seized monasteries, and they have kicked these monks out. They have stolen relics. They have, you know, this is your Ukrainian government. So they have set this up, and now these two different churches.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.